Hey, everybody, welcome to the show. I'm your host, Simon Head. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by FetchClass.com. FetchClass.com is a teaching and learning system that teachers and students can link together in a video conference and learn one-on-one. It's cheap, it's free to join, it's safe, and it's fun. FetchClass.com. Big announcement, folks. Got a live show coming up. A live podcast recording, very first time, at The Cage, January 27th, 292 College Street. The guests so far have not been confirmed, so I actually can't tell you who's playing or who's doing what, but I know Cam Carpenter's spinning tunes all night, before and after, and in between guests. Also want to let you know about my Patreon campaign. Go to patreon.com/apologue, and you can pledge to the show. As little or as much as you want. It would help out the show tremendously if you did that. Okay. Also, another thing I want to let you know is to go to the apologue.ca homepage, click on the banners, the Amazon banners. Whether you're from America, from England, or from Canada, click on the corresponding banner, bookmark the link, and every time you go shop on Amazon, go to that bookmarked link and help the show out. Costs you no extra money, and it's awesome. Thanks. Go apologue.ca/shop. I got t-shirts for sale there. You can buy the shirts. They just came in today and they're pretty sweet looking. I'm wearing one right now. That's all the snake oil I'm pushing right now. Today's guest is Mr. Luther Wright of Luther Wright and the Wrongs. He's a singer-songwriter, guitar player, formerly of the band called Weeping Tile. If anybody's been around in the 90s, they know who Weeping Tile is. They're a Kingston-based band. And they're pretty fun. Sarah Harma came out of that band and she is still a contributing person to the Canadian music scene and pretty cool thing to listen to. Luther Wright and the Wrongs has just put a new album out called Hearts and Lonely Hunters, and they are going to be on tour over the winter and over the spring and over the summer into 2016. I'm going to play one of their songs. The song is called Old World on the Apologue podcast.
Out of mud and sticks. You said it looked like a nest, but I swear it was a rocket ship. Each night I get inside, I close my eyes, and I pray that the world will change by the time that I come out again. Oh world, oh body, oh world, oh body, oh lovely world, you're looking pretty good now. I miss my TV screen, I miss my magazines, and I miss my shitty job that never taught me anything. I was an engineer, I feel useless here. I wish I'd spent my time learning how to live outside.
Oh,
We had a little rough start, a little rough patch. Internet hated us today, but we will persevere through the old guys trying to work with internet. It's like our parents trying to screw with the VCR.
It's a painful experience, but it's behind us now, and we're on the phone talking about music.
Yeah, man. Hearts and Lonely Hunters, your new album. It's been a while, right?
It has been. It's a long time coming. Mm-hmm. But Chris and I had, we put some thought to it and took our time with it. So I'm pretty happy how it came out.
And it's a little bit at the start, there's a departure for you from what would be the genre of bluegrass, I guess. But I mean, a lot of people don't like being pigeonholed, but that's sort of what you're sort of somewhat pigeonholed as, right? Would you take that as a fair assumption?
We messed around with bluegrass and banjos to a degree, and we've had some great pickers in the band. Like Dan Whiteley's played mandolin on and off with the Wrongs for years, and he's from the whole bluegrass gang, started at the Silver Dollar Wednesday, High Lonesome Wednesdays and such. So,
right.
Yeah, we sort of copped some of that stuff. Basically, that's the root of it, is the High Lonesome Wednesdays with Jenny and Dan Whiteley and that gang.
I hear a little bit of, I don't know, check me if I'm wrong, but I hear a little bit of Bowie in it too, especially at the start. Is that, am I picking up on something there?
That's really nice of you to say.
Like Bowie in the Ziggy era, you know, like the Ziggy Stardust era.
I'm in my Ziggy Stardust era right now, actually. Well, you know.
You're dressed, you got the eye makeup on and the sparkles.
Yeah, it's more of an internal thing and a behavioral assumption, I would say. But Bowie, of course, you know, is such a, I guess, being 12 and 13 when Changes One came out, which is a compilation tune, so even at that point, you know, mm-hmm. and just discovering it at a young age, like in grade 7, I guess, and all those tunes. And yeah, it's fun to do that. But
you're not much older than me too, so I mean, I'm in my mid 40s, and we all had our Bowie Changes era, and mine was when I was in grade 7 too. And then Modern Love came out, and then that sort of changed my life a little bit too.
Oh, it's fun. Well, I guess another thing is probably more direct influence maybe on these songs and this record and the recording is that we've been spinning Ziggy Stardust on vinyl regularly for the last couple years. As our like a Friday night rock record or so.
Yeah.
So, and, yeah.
Yeah, I also hear a lot of everybody playing in the same room. Did you all sort of pick up in one room and start recording? Or is this obviously over a period of time you recorded this album, right?
Yeah. I don't want to pop the bubble of the believability of all of us in the room and just roll and tape kind of thing. But that's how it sounds because that's how we... It was recorded and mixed and put together, and it was a lot of it was recorded at Chris's studio, predominantly most of the record, okay. Except for a few overdubs in New York and a couple of places. But it was in Chris Brown's studio on Wolf Island, the post office. It's the old post office from, I don't know, 60 years ago, but wow. He's built a home in a rustic studio scenario in there with a wood stove pinging and popping and water, the tea kettle boiling and cats jumping on. Around and it's kind of chaotic, but everything was done most in that room, but not necessarily at the same time. But you can just kind of close your eyes and put the headphones on, and you're that kind of feeling comes through nicely when it's produced as such, and the energy of the musicians is in that headspace. I think early on when we first started making records, it was important to all be sitting in the room and looking at each other, and that just seemed like crazy to be able to do it any other way. But I think over the years, when you're looking at the end result, more of the process, so you're kind of thinking ahead, like, okay, I want it to sound like this. And having made so many albums and worked on records, we all kind of had an idea, like, well, we know how to achieve that. Yeah. So we can do it separately. Like Cam would come in, did all the drums in a couple of different sessions and put the phones on, and the band was, there was a lot of stuff to play along with for the drummer. A lot of, when you record as a band, often the drummer has to do it. He's the predominant thing at the beginning. So they got to play along in their heads a little more. And then you build the track around what the drummer did. So, which can be great. However, as a songwriter and guitar player, kind of bass player, I wanted to set how the song was going dynamically in a lot of ways. And then imagining how the drums would be, because I know how Cam and I play together. And then him coming in at the end and having a lot of fun, like it's all there, the guitars are raging, he can just rock out, and then you get this sound that, you know, maybe works, makes it sound more like you're playing together.
Well, yeah, kudos to your producer for making that completely oblivious to me, because I have a keen sense and an understanding of how recordings are made, and when I hear general subtleties where everybody kind of plays together, there's some thought put into that for it to happen this way. Because when you're doing it live, it's usually an accident. Whoops, we all slowed down a little bit. Now we're all speeding up a little bit. But I hear these nice little subtleties in the songs that sort of allow that, oh, we're all, you know, we're all breathing the same breath right now. And that's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's fun. And also, I mean, I play a lot of the instruments. I mean, so I play along with myself. It's kind of like, oh, hey, isn't that interesting? The rhythm's the same, because I only have, you know, I'm doing what I do. So when I play the bass, it kind of locked. It was lots of fun and singing harmonies as well, you know, like not having to figure out the phrasing. Like when you're singing on a harmony part for someone else, you got to get a couple of runs through, or unless you've done it live a bunch. But a lot of times in the studio, it's new material. So you're like, Sarah Harmer came and did a lot of the backups, and she knew of some of the tunes, but a bunch of them she didn't. So she literally wrote out the words, and she just worked on the phrasing, and she's really fast, but it still took her a bunch of takes. But
yeah,
so it's, when I doing it myself was like bang, bang, bang. Like, it was really fun. And Chris did all the work, and I show up with a bottle of wine and some Miss Vicky salt and vinegar chips, and let's make a record. Yeah.
There's also, we're in a hybrid era of recording now where only bands like maybe Fleetwood Mac could sit in a studio all day and have nothing and come up with a new idea. And we're in such an era now of everybody's got something, and it's about getting good vibes now for, you know, not spending an exorbitant amount of money in a big analog recording studio. And the other thought I had is, if you have people playing all over North America, the physical mailing of tape is expensive and dangerous, because that's, you're sending your kid out to to another country to be recorded on. It may be broken.
Yeah, that's, it's true.
And we're in a neat little pocket now where I send you, like, we're doing it this way. It sounds like we're in the same, that's my tell now. Now it sounds like we're in the same room, but you've recorded your voice and I've recorded my voice, and we smash it together, and we've created the illusion of being in the same room. It's a wondrous time we live in, you know? Once we get around all the quirks and problems.
It's true. Well, it's changed everything. You still need, like, recording wise, there's song. I mean, the simplicity, the process, and the accessibility is just really helped cut corners on one end. But at the other side, you need something to record, like a good songs or good idea. Like, there's no real, I mean, they're trying to come up with an idea app. They can call them what they want, but it's still someone else's idea, I guess, until they write a code that creates ideas. But that's,
then we're talking artificial intelligence, and that's scary. Then we start talking about Skynet, weirdness like that, you know?
Well, music and not the music industry in general, but there's certainly a lot of money behind a really creating a predictable, likable sound that, analyzing what makes people smile and such. And that's such a brave new world of artificial stuff that people, you know, if it sounds good, it is good.
Well, there's such a grip on the public now too. I just worked a corporate show yesterday for a London Drugs, and they talked about database management and how they know by the second who's buying what, when, what age group, where, what store, it's insane. The amount of knowledge that, you know, they're getting on you to create their market. It's insane and scary.
Yes, it's disturbing, one might say. You know, but if that energy and technology and understanding can be used to perpetuate a better world for humanity and all the creatures and the planet and such, which seems like, well, I think if we can do this, we can do that. You know, if we can use all, do market research to sell phones and gadgets and such, we can use that same market research and energies and marketing skills to improve people's behavior, yada, yada, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's exciting times.
The traffic app, like when you go to cut someone off, your car should say, now, Luther, is this what you really want to do? You really want to create this problem? Because it can see into the future about all the things that's going to happen when you do, you know, cut this person off. Like, he's going to go home. He's going to be mad. He's going to get in a fight. He's going to kick his dog, you know. So it should be all the accountability of one small move.
Is that like a Scottish Presbyterian car computer talking? The Calvinist car tech.
He doesn't need it. He does. True. He's not trying. He's just this. He's in a hurry. Don't be mad. You know, it would be really nice if someone used like this technology, like you say, for the root of good, like just to make you feel good. Like the idea, like there's certain things, like when you see something, it's pleasing to you. Your brain is doing a million calculations, and I'm sure if they harness that with music, they will just have people sitting in pods listening to music in a constant orgasmic state, you know. Hmm. If they can, they will.
Well, yes. And who are they?
I don't know. Where right. Them, I guess, yeah. So we just got off on the weird little thing there. But let's talk about them, because it took you a while to make this record, and I did see that you did some crowdfunding. And was that, obviously it was successful because the record came out. But what was how did you feel about the process of all that? Did it all go good?
Crowdsourcing and Indiegogo, it was great. It was, I had a lot of help. My friend Kari kind of ran the campaign and kept me focused and just the people's generosity and interest in the project. It was great. It's a great way to connect all the obvious things, mm-hmm. you know,
absolutely.
That people can feel involved and the immediate results of predominantly it's pre-sales with a fair amount of contributions and just like, you know, people throwing money at the hat kind of thing. Yeah. But just, having a chunk of change to make a low budget or an average budget recording you can do for certain, you know, certain amounts of money. Chris has got a real studio with real stuff, and he's such a talent. I mean, he's just made so much music in his life and been making these wonderful albums out there at the studio. So definitely needed to up the budget a little more. So the crowdsourcing thing was, it was a great, great success. Can't thank everybody enough. And it's been piqued my interest in following what other people are doing in the arts with crowdsourcing, because it's
The idea of knowing you're directly communicating with your fans or the people that follow your music, that they feel that they have a part in helping you create something, is rewarding for both sides. There's a lot of, you know, there is some naysayers to the whole crowdfunding thing. Like, you know, I've heard the old punkers say, well, I used to just get in a van and go on tour and eat potato chip sandwiches. And my answer to that is, well, then you're not making much of an impact if you're just martyring people into how much suffering you did for your art. It's
unless you're a punk band, and that's kind of part and parcel of the whole thing, man. But for sure. Well, I mean, to each their own. Sure. I think there's nothing. I mean, we rocked the van touring for a decade or more between a couple of bands. And, it's addictive. I've been doing less of that in the last few years. We're still playing a lot, but not jumping in the van for 6 to 8 weeks or longer, depending on the time of year, and just pumping it out and living the life and rocking and just have the connection you have playing as musicians and the big wide world of friends and enablers who help you get from A to B and feed you, and just the life and the people you meet. It's just the best thing, but it's also, it's a different way to do it. Now with the internets and social media, you can achieve a lot of that, like you're saying, mm-hmm. and you're crazy not to, because that's how people communicate. And when you can, downloading and streaming is, just like instant gratification. If people like you, or you like, Frank Black does a new tune, want to check it out? Bingo, bango.
There it is.
You and Franco.
Yeah. And also what you're saying is it when you're inspired by the people, you get instant feedback from what you're inspired by. It only feeds the inspiration for you to go out and do more. You know, for your say, if you live in the middle of nowhere and you put records out and people like you, you have no clue 20 years ago how many people like you or hate you or buy your records, unless you're told by someone, this is how many people are buying and selling your records. It's such a wondrous time right now where you can just log on to your Bandcamp account and say, oh, I sold this many, or get a little notification on your phone and say, I've sold this. It feeds the inspiration for more art to come out of you. It's only good, you know, and we were talking a little bit about using it for good, and that would be one example, right?
Well, that's for sure. Yeah, it's lots of fun. I just have a little a store at our website. You can just click on and I get an email and pack off a CD with a sticker to your place.
Yeah. And who needs labels now, really? I mean, honestly.
I like the direct approach. This record, Hearts and Lonely Hunters, we made, is going to be distributed by Outside Music in Canada. They distribute our last few albums. Mm-hmm. And those guys are great. They've been, we had an album on a label called Drog Records, Dave's Records of Guelph, out of Guelph, Ontario. And the fella Dave Tykrobe and his buddy Lewis Melville had a label that had a arrangement with Outside Music that after Drog's Records was put out to pasture and Dave moved out west and such, things moved on. Outside Music has honored the distribution arrangement with all of us. So it's just nice and homely, you know, Canada, such great people.
And now I think distributors are kind of a little faster to turn around their market plan when it comes to putting records in stores, or there's a whole different thought process about that. I don't know what it is, but I mean, there's a whole new way, you know, like in the early 2000s, I had a band in Europe and three or four distributors went out of business and all of a sudden I lost 4,000 CDs. They just disappeared.
I could see how it could go south. That's why I would say like with Outside and the people there, Lloyd and Kevin and the guys we've been dealing with for all these years, it's just a steady on thing. Lloyd's just, they're just straight up people. They've expanded and done, they do a lot of different stuff and they have their own label. I think O Susanna's on
label.
And, but they also, Kevin Lynn, who was in the awesome band, back in the day, he does the digital stuff, but just having someone keeping track of all the brave new world of, digital, how your music is being used and such, which is all being, there's, you know, that's intellectual copyright stuff is the big thing. So having someone on top of that I've already worked with. I mean, it's most distribution of the hard copy CDs for a band at our level or concern, I guess. My marketing plan is a one page thing, you know, to be able to find your records, if you go into a record store and they can find it at the Outside Music catalog, is a nice old fashioned thing, especially with vinyl, which we're making. So that'll be sort of the thinking more ahead of just putting everything on vinyl and having it distributed available for people who want to order it out.
It's a shame that vinyl costs so much money to make.
It'll probably go down.
Yeah.
There's some new options, but you know, if people are willing to pay $25 for a copy of your album, I know you can get, you can buy used records cheaper, but to buy a newly produced album for 20, it seems like a great deal. I do it in a heartbeat at every show at the Black Sheep Inn. I see there's vinyl, you know, and $25 to $30 a copy, that it's affordable. You know, it's crazy to, I mean, you think, oh, should we get the car fixed or should I get 300 copies? Yeah, you know, does Junior need to go to college or this year, or can we like wait till September?
I remember when vinyl was $10.99 way back in 1983.
Oh yeah, six pack was $4.
Yeah,
you could smoke indoors on airplanes. So yeah, vinyl. That we're getting our vinyl made. Sam Co. Company and Sam O. Media from Toronto. Our buddy. Mike Dubay from the Hilotrons, the greatest band in the world, right? Who lives up this way? He turned me on to those guys. And our buddy Marty Kinnick, who mastered the Hearts and Lonely Hunters record. Mm-hmm. He's worked with those guys a few times. So
years ago, I lived in Winnipeg, and KTEL was getting out of making records in 1992, and they had a press for sale on like whatever the paper. They're record pressing. Could you imagine for a second how awesome it would be to have in your garage your own record making press?
Crazy.
Yeah, the whole rig.
And you could learn how to do it.
Functioning, you know, functioning. And now you could capture a market. I mean, if that thing was, it's probably still in use today. I would imagine someone picked it up, stored it, and realized, you know, this is great. Like, I can make, you know, records for people. And I've seen on YouTube how people can custom cut on plastic your record. So it cuts it for you. Like, single cut lathing system. It's kind of neat. Because it's
perfect.
Pretty simple, you know, design, really. It's a couple of speakers and a needle vibrating. It's, yeah, just making it sound good is the, and mastering it, too. You said, who mastered it for vinyl? Did you get a couple of different masters done for it, right?
Marty Kinnick mastered the album for the CD, and then for vinyl. Yeah, he made a separate vinyl master, which it's going to sound great. He's a Winnipeg fella. You mentioned Winnipeg.
Oh, cool. So the idea of mastering for vinyl versus I've seen releases saying mastered for iTunes, and I don't know what that. I really don't know what that means.
Well, maybe it's for just different the sounds of the speakers and the system that they play through.
Yeah.
With vinyl, the mastering for vinyl, it's a matter of the low end, the low frequencies.
Right.
They make the bottom, the very low lows, a mono track, as opposed to, because a stereo needle, this is our technical part of the podcast here today, on a turntable needle, there's a little, if you look really closely, there's like a left and right side to it, which is the left and right, the stereo image that you get from the music. So in the very low lows, I guess the low frequency confuses the stereo part of the needle, and I don't know if it phases or does something. So they just make the low end mono, so it just reads the same on both sides, as opposed to trying to have a left right of like a really low frequency.
Right. Yeah.
Because there's nothing going on except for the same thing. It's not like you got an oboe and a French horn or somewhere. Anyway, so mastering for vinyl, they just do that little bit, and maybe they put a little shine on it. I hope. I don't know.
Yeah.
How much did he charge me? It's a miraculous process, the mastering process, that when they, after all the mixing, and Chris did such a good job. The tunes on the record, a variety of the beginnings, the first half is sort of rock and roll pop stuff, harkens back a little to our Weeping Tile days, and the Mugwarts. My brother and me had a band, and then the second side two, because the second part of the CD, which is side two of the vinyl, is rootsy country balladeering of a bunch of tunes I've had kicking around for a while, and some tunes, a few new tunes, and then a couple of cover songs of friends' songs. So,
Lots
of fun to do.
Which ones were those?
The song Lucifer, which is a Hank and Lily band from Victoria. They're amazing, wonderful pop, artistic rockers. Also, the song Old World is an adaptation of a tune by my buddy Marco from the band Meat Draw, also from Victoria.
Okay.
And the last song on the record is a song by Tony Shear, who plays bass on the Front Porch song. He's been a buddy for years. He's a guitar player, and he plays bass with Bill Frisell and Willie Nelson and all the Cats. He's one of Chris Brown's buddies from Toronto, New York City, from back in the day. And so it's fun just to, like, I've known all those folks for a good long time and just love their music. I could have done a whole album of friends, personal musical friends, songs who I play that I have learned over the years. There's so many little gems, you know.
Oh, definitely.
To get out there,
it's the greatest form of flattery, and you will definitely have a drink bought for you at the bar when you meet that person in the bar.
That's right.
You're coming to Toronto, right?
We are coming down on Wednesday, November 25th, playing the Cameron House. It's a sort of official sort of CD release, album release event. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna have the whole band, the original Wrongs, Sean Kelly, Dan Curtis, Cam Giroux. Chris Brown, producer guy on keys, our friend Miss Emily singing backups, and maybe a couple other guests. Rock the record.
I'm going to try and make it down for that. That's going to be fun. We were talking a little bit about possibly recording your show for you somehow. But
yeah,
I don't know if Melanie spoke to you about it, but
If it's not too insane or such.
Yeah, well, we're done this. We'll talk a little bit about it to see if it's feasible, because just for the fact of not, it's the Cameron House, you know, it's a great place, it's not conducive. It does, you know what I mean, for a bunch of cameras and stuff. So
no, but getting some footage is nice, and in the age of the YouTube channel,
absolutely,
you can always use clips and bits for fun things, you know, to spread the word of the magic.
Definitely. And one thing that bugs me about YouTube is watching live videos where it's off the iPhone or camera.
That's getting a bit old, eh?
It is. It's just one of those, I wish I was there, but if you think about it, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe you're like, well, next time they come to town, I'm going to go there so I actually hear what it sounds like. Maybe if you get it too good, people will be even more complacent and not go to shows. Maybe I'm doing wrong. Who knows?
Don't get too caught up in that, man. Okay. I think everybody, the live rock and roll and music is always going to attract people. Part of our savage love.
Yeah. I'm excited that, that live music is sort of still alive and still kicking. It's a blessing to be able to go see shows where maybe 10 years ago I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I really want to go to shows or go to that show. And, you know, so I'm trying to.
Yeah, it's a commitment. It definitely isn't. But, it seems like people of all ages, but especially young people, it's one of the great things. You can start going to shows before the drinking age, like all ages shows. And
you get
the vibe for being at, virtually, it's like being at a show or at a bar, except there's no booze, but still that everything else is exactly the same. So you get your game on how to enjoy a show, where to stand, what you like, what you don't like, how many people to go with.
Yeah. What do you prefer? Do you prefer like small town, little small shows, or do you like Toronto? I mean, they sound like they're two completely different types of shows, but.
You mean playing them?
Yeah. What's your favorite part of both sides? Because you can't say, I hate playing in the city, because that will just.
Oh, God, no. I love the city. It's fun, I think it's great, Canada, North America. I mean, I've been, played a bit in Europe, never with the band, but there's a great variety of stuff. I love town halls and old taverns, and but the big city bars and festivals and outdoor stages and street parties and barn dances and boat play on the Island Queen, or just anywhere where you can put a show on is a blast. But it's fun to play places like the Cameron House. And I mean, we rocked many different places in Toronto over the years, so it's any time to go back and play them again. It's been a good stretch since we played at the Cameron House. And
Do you approach it differently if you're playing, say, in a fair somewhere in Northern Ontario? Do you approach the show? Is it the same, get in your same headspace?
With this record, the plan is, and that what we've been doing in the couple of shows we played is to play the album pretty true to the album and have a show. You know, the first part is sort of a show that's we're not going to really nail until further notice. And then a second set, just going at it wrong style, where I'll just start songs, or one of us will yell out a song and we'll just play and see what the vibe in the room is. But that's generally going to rock anyway.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it really makes too much of a difference. I mean, we're not idiots. If people aren't getting into something, we'll try something else. Or we want to make people happy and smile. But I think it's going to be fun. It's fun to flush out these tunes. We literally had never played a bunch of them live until we played at the Black Sheep Inn up here in Wakefield a few weeks ago. And it was exciting to kind of be going in just thinking, okay, how's this going to sound? And we'd had one or two rehearsals and worked out a few parts, but it flew really nicely. You know, it was like the Wright Brothers and Kitty Hawk.
I have a friend of mine who, there seems to be a big resurgence in Americana/bluegrass festivals/country. That sort of country is the four letter word for these festivals now, especially in the like northern part of upstate New York. And are you familiar with some of these ones that are going on now? They're
Well, we played a I think there's just so many festivals. It's crazy. But yeah, we played some upper New York State things, and in Vermont there's a few great ones up not like half an hour from the border. North Kingdom Fest. And we were playing at the down in Western Michigan near Kalamazoo, and two summers ago at a there's 15,000 people, campers, and it's just a little festival. Like, I think we were the headliners, or us and the Kinsey Report, who's the dude, Donald Kinsey's been around forever. He's a legend. It was amazing. But just to be up there, like, I mean, primarily because we recorded Pink Floyd's The Walls, a country record.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of legs at hoser festivals or medium-sized small festivals where people are like, let's get, see if those guys will come and play. And,
yeah,
you know, we work up some of the songs from the Wall or the Pink Floyd record because they're lots of fun to play. Yep. But just generally play our own stuff anyway, like honky-tonk, kind of barroom rock, whatever you want to call it, punk, a little punk grass in there. But it goes over well, and just, yeah, sort of the nothing better than those little festivals. Or
the idea too that it's fam. There's a lot of it's a kind of still run in the intent of putting music to people. It seems like the corporate sponsorship has not really jumped into that tertiary market of smaller festivals. They want to
I think it's probably just as much to do with people haven't been offered any corporate money as much as some people are like, we don't take corporate money. I think when it, not like anyone who wants to contribute to a music festival, generally, you know, it's tough when there's a shitload of ads everywhere. Yeah. And it, you know, I love the Quebec, the music festival in Quebec in the summer in Quebec City, but boy, there's just so many images flashing. It's like Blade Runner at parts, and it's kind of incongruous with like it's right in the edge of the old city of Saint-Jean-Gate or so, you know, where you're, there's all this history and limestone and beauty. And then they just like the Coke ads and the car ads, like that, you know, how car commercials are $1 million for they spend $1 million on a 45 second GM commercial. And it's like watching Star Wars when you're a kid. It's crazy. And that happens every 13 minutes during NFL football. Like, it's just the imagery is crazy.
Sure. And you know, the other thing is, from what my friend tells me, these adventure stories of getting down to upstate New York and walking for a mile. And it sounds like that sucks, but you're in the moment and you're there with 10,000 other people. And that's exciting because you're all going through the same motion. Like, you could wait for the bus, you could just walk 2 miles to the festival. Oh, let's just walk, you know. And it seems if you put a bunch of car commercials and banners up, that people would be like, it's not my festival anymore, you know, because there's a certain, you know, there's a crossing of the line of now we're in a festival that's cool and hip and we've watched our favorite groups. And then all of a sudden there's going to be, maybe next year if it gets huge, we don't want it to be that huge. We still want it to be inherently ours. So it's almost policed in a way by the people.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, Canadians and Americans and upstate New York are just, I don't know, we're good people. It's not like the wildest cult, like English Canadians I'm speaking of, because I think it's different in Quebec. It's, you know, people are pretty well behaved, and like Will Phelan Music Fest is a great fest. We were there this summer. That was the last weekend of the recording of this record.
Okay.
Was during the festival, which we didn't know at the time, but it was super fun to be plugging away at the studio and then the festival was going on. So going up and seeing bands, and but just also sitting on Chris's porch, having a beer with his eight cats, watching all the hipsters go by on their way up to the festival
and listening. Yeah. Yeah.
People are just, you know, they're so well dressed in the new fashion that I was thinking, oh, that must be the guy from that band. Oh no, it's just some kid with a hot dog. Oh, that's got, oh, look at that. Must be her from, no, that I hear. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it was a hipster alert, man.
The hipster alert. Thing is an interesting, I mean, it is a weird thing. Cool. I mean, I have a friend who belongs to this axe throwing club, and they all have like the big beards and the flannel shirts, and they look amazing. You know, it looks great, but I just can't grow a beard because I look like an old hobo.
That's
not a good thing to go for. It's an old hobo look.
Yeah, and some of those sickos like beat up hobos, and that's, you know, you're already if you're in the arts, you don't really.
Yeah, the trend of beard trend, I think it's almost done. I got a feeling. I think people are looking at themselves and going, "Wait a minute. Wait, you look just like me." This isn't right.
No, it's a good time to invest in Gillette or some razor companies, because everyone will start shaving again and they'll be like a glut. shortage, I should say. So
they could start their own like suck and cut, like in Wayne's World, but it's like for the beard, and then it'll quaff it. Yeah. You know, the other thing I was going to say is that crossing the border is a much easier experience now than it was 10 years ago. So the idea of getting down there, I don't know if you know about the legalities now. They've loosened it up a little bit.
Well, I believe one must have a P2 visa or a certain work visa that relates to what you're doing, much like if you're a carpenter or a drywaller or a doctor or a musician. The musician one, the last time I checked, was the P2, I think. But depending on your family, you know, if you have American background, some people have dual citizenship, but yeah, it's still a pain in the butt, I believe. But
I heard that the fees went down for your work papers, though. So just do a simple Google search to see. But I've heard that it's, well, at least for Americans to come up this way, they've loosened it up.
Yeah, it's a pain in the ass. It's great. It is. It's great for American bands and our friends who come up. It's a lot easier for them because, I mean, to drive up from, a lot of our pals are from New York. It's 6 hours or 7 hours, 6 hours to the Thousand Island Bridge border. So it's a long way to drive to get turned around. Whereas for us from Kingston, it's like 25 minutes. You get there, they're like, "Oh, your papers aren't in order." And then, you know, you go have a beer and a cheese sandwich and then you try again.
Yeah.
No, it's a pain in the, it's funny. I get it though. I do get it, but it's been a long running bureaucratic headache for bands who are not making money or probably spending more money than they're going to make.
Yeah.
Or just breaking even. But at the same time, they're making whatever money they're making at shows, they're paying their band members and their road guys or whatever, and spending in the States and moving around. Like, it's totally doesn't make any economic sense to penalize that. I could see if you go down and play a whopping big show and make $30,000 that the Uncle Sam wants his cut, or Canada Revenue wants their cut. But oh my God, it's tough. I mean, it's small business at any level is hard. So
the idea of going across, like you're saying, playing no money for no money, you are pumping into the economy, and Europe has figured it out. I mean, you can go there and take your guitar and they know,
cultured.
You know, they know, like, there's a certain amount of aesthetic of a guy traveling from Toronto to Italy and having one guitar. You know, it's different than if you're a part
of it. That's all you can afford. Like, the extra baggage is just like, you can't afford that. So you can only bring one guitar. Or maybe you get there and you rent a lute, right? And you just
it's true. But the idea of pumping money into the economy, it shouldn't be like a big negative thing. And that's sort of the perpetual fear of Americans that, you know, for... They're more worried about terrorists, I think, than they are of the musician posing.
Definitely. That has worked in our favor since 9/11. If they check you out and you're like, okay, you go, have fun.
Yeah.
Whereas before, because I think that now they're looking for a bigger fish, and a bunch of long haired, disassociated musicians from Eastern Ontario. They may as well just let us go. It's going to take hours to clean that van up.
Face of Al-Qaeda is that panel van from Rent-A-Wreck, and that's the new face right there.
I hope not. Well, Justin Trudeau is going to fix all that. So.
I hope so. I feel confident, you know?
Great.
But any of these politicians, they're all politicians. They're all kind of like, you know, half-truths and things like this, but... if he's half of what his dad was, I'm okay with that.
Very good.
Yeah. Well, hey, man, I appreciate you coming on the show, and we got it all together. Are you good with anything?
Right. The album Hearts and Lonely Hunters coming out the end of November, available through on our website, lutherwright.com, and other media stuff, which we'll be getting out there. And thanks for having me on the show. This is a great opportunity to chat and
Yeah.
And get the word out. And our big Toronto release show at the Cameron House on November 25th with the band and the whole gang in the back room. It's 9 o'clock.
Amazing. Well, thanks so much, man.
Okay, man. You take care.
You too. And there he was, Luther Wright from Luther Wright and the Wrongs. Thanks for doing the podcast, Luther. That was super fun. So before we get to the end credits, I want to play one more song. I want to play Come Over and Jam. It's on the new record, Hearts and Lonely Hunters. And you can pick the album up. I believe the record comes out on the 13th of November. Okay? So don't... I believe that's what it said. Now, I'm sorry if I got that wrong. But from what I gathered, it was the 13th of November. So everybody, come on over and jam Luther Wright and the Wrongs.
Come over and jam. We'll write up some songs. We'll cook up some food. Maybe load up the bomb. We won't tell the truth. The truth ain't for songs. You oughta stay in the dark. Have us lead you along. We'll hide from the facts. We'll kick back and relax. Come over and jam. Bring whoever along. You put the beer in the fridge. We'll put the words in the song. And the nuggets of truth will come clear when they're wrong. We gotta stay in the dark. How you lead us along. We'll mess with the facts as if they ever keep track. So come over and jam. Yeah, come over and jam. Could we ever go wrong? Cause we all love the truth. But truth ain't for song. We wanna stay in the dark. We wanna lead you along. We'll hide from the facts. Kick back and relax. So come over and jam. Yeah, come over and jam. Come over and jam.
Come over and jam. Cool song, huh? A departure, I thought, from the what I normally knew Luther Wright and the Wrongs to be. So that's kind of cool, right? Okay, everybody, I want to let you know. Here we go again. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter, at SimonHead666. Like the podcast on Facebook by /ApologPod. Please, this podcast, go check it out. It is sponsored by FetchClass.com. FetchClass.com, go there. Check it out. Don't forget to go to the Amazon affiliation program by going to apolog.ca and clicking on the banners on the right side. From there, you just click on that bookmark link, and every time you shop on Amazon, go to that bookmark link and help the show out. It's a tremendous help, believe it or not. It really does help. Don't forget to go to patreon.com/apologue. You'll be helping the show by pledging $1 or $2 a month. You can cancel at any time, and it's super fun. Go to apologue.ca/shop if you want to pick up a t-shirt. I have them now, and like I said before, if you are in the Durham region, I will hand-deliver that sucker to you. It does sound weird, but it's not as weird as it sounds. Believe me, I will drop it off, and you will have a shirt. All right, so once again, everybody, thanks so much for tuning into this podcast. Next week, we got a guy named Eddie Paul on the podcast, a man I've never met, a young 28-year-old buck from Montreal who's a singer-songwriter. Go check him out. Thanks to Melanie Kay for helping me out with this interview and next week's interview, Eddie Paul, and today's Luther Right and the Wrongs episode. You can go check her out at melaniekaypr.com. K is spelled K-A-Y-E. Okay, so we'll see you again next week. I'll be here. Bye-bye. Yeah.